The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Coming your way on a Wednesday. Tomorrow we have football again. The Browns and the Bengals looking for their first wins of 2020. Dan Orlovsky is here. Keyshawn Johnson's here. That's Marcus Spears right behind us. So much happening around the league. Later we'll answer this question. Is Bruce Arians being too hard on Tom Brady? Swagoo's got takes on that. But first, the latest news with Adam Schefter, beginning with Richard Sherman. Schefty, take it away.
Well, Laura, the 49ers placed Richard Sherman on IR today, which means he'll miss at least the next 3 weeks with a calf injury. They did sign Ken Webster, a cornerback, off the Miami Dolphins practice squad. They promoted one of their own quarterbacks for Sunday's game. And also, George Kittle did not practice today, which means they have not given up hope he'll play Sunday, but he will not practice all week. Not a good sign for them. And the Eagles, Lane Johnson, and their running back, Miles Sanders, were back at practice today after missing games on Sunday. They are both on track to play Sunday against the Rams if they can get through this week healthy with a good week of practice. But the sounds of it is right now that Sanders and Johnson will make their debuts this season. And then, of course, Chris Godwin, the Buccaneers wide receiver, is in concussion protocol. So last week there were questions about whether Mike Evans would play for Tampa Bay. And this week there'll be questions about whether Chris Godwin will play in the concussion protocol, which probably means a bigger role for Mike Evans and Scotty Miller, amongst others, Laura.
Shefty with us all show long, and as our friend Herm Edwards once said, you play to win the game, yet somebody's got to lose. And in week one, 16 teams lost, but there were a few surprises among them, most notably the Eagles, Cowboys, and 49ers. So 0-1 something, but falling to 0-2 could have serious ramifications for a team's chance to make the postseason. Even if we included the new 14-team playoff field, just 7.9% of the playoff teams since 2002 made it after an 0-2 start. That's 20 of 200. 152 teams, and just one went on to win the Super Bowl. That team, of course, being the 2007 Giants. They ruined the Patriots' undefeated season. So, Key, give us an 0-1 team that you're keeping a close eye on this week.
The Minnesota Vikings. That pass defense suffered last week in the hands of Aaron Rodgers. 72% completion percentage, 364 yards, 4 touchdowns. And I believe in Mike Zimmer, and I believe they're going to get it turned around. You don't run into quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers every single week in the National Football League.
Vikings taking on the Colts this week. How about you, Dan?
The defending NFC champion, San Francisco 49ers. Last week, Jimmy G looked uncomfortable in the pocket. Understanding or misunderstanding what coverages were, missing balls to the outside, they gave up way too much penetration in their run game. Seattle, the Rams and Arizona can both get to 2-0. They need to win this week.
49ers have the Jets. And Marcus, what team that's 0-1 are you looking out for this week?
Oh, Laura, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. They gave up 8 sacks to the Washington football team, and now they get Aaron Donald and company. And we saw how reckless Aaron Donald was against the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. Carson Wentz needs to be very careful. Getting Lane Johnson back is huge for them.
Yeah, the Eagles have the Rams. The team I'm watching out for, the Cowboys. They need a win in a big way week two, coming off a loss to those Rams, in which they had some chances late. Some questioned the aggressive play call you saw there on 4th and 3, considering the pressure on Dak Prescott and this offense. Feels like the sky could fall. I know that sounds dramatic, but look, they really probably can't lose to the Falcons. Our football power index favors the Cowboys in 5 of their next 6 games, including Sunday's matchup against those Falcons. Remember, lots of inconsistency from this team last season. They won 3 straight, then lost 3 straight before battling the rest of the way to finish with an 8-8 record.
This is the most interesting thing to me that I'm watching this weekend, because I think the biggest conversation in Dallas this week is who, not what, right? When it comes to plays, sometimes as play callers, you think we've got to have the greatest play. And at the end of the day, it's like, are we running this play for the right person, right? Those two situations, CeeDee Lamb, it's his first game in the NFL. Michael Gallup's still a young player. And you bring up a great point, Key. Why is it not Amari Cooper? It brings me back to last year, because 4th and 8 against the Cowboys, he's not on the field. These two situations, I think that's the biggest conversation Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore are having is, hey, this is my first game as your head coach listening to you call plays. Why was that not Amari Cooper? We just paid him $100 million. Why is Amari Cooper not the guy in the go route? And that's the number one thing I want to see this week is, does Kellen Moore learn from Mike McCarthy about that aspect of the game?
Marcus, what do you think? Can they get on the same page, Kellen Moore and McCarthy, that quickly after a week of seeing this not work as well?
Yes, I believe so, Laura. One reason is they're getting paid to. This is an unforgiving league. You have to get better by the next week when you identify things that are a weakness. And they have the Falcons this weekend. This is not going to be an easy task. Matt Ryan just threw for 400-something-odd yards. Julio Jones is going to be on the other side. Calvin Ridley is going to be over there. Hayden Hurst, Todd Gurley. And there were moments during the Seattle game, I know it was a loss for the Falcons, where you look at that offense and say they should be able to score and put points up on anybody. So Dallas needs to not only make a statement about what type of team they are, but they better not play around with Atlanta because you'll get bit bad by that offensive firepower that they have over there.
You certainly don't want to wind up being 0-2 in this situation if you're the Dallas Cowboys, because you think you're America's team now and people talking about you. Go 0-2, and Dan will have a field day with you at 0-2.
Oh, they don't want to start 0-2 for me. I would say, like, this is a very interesting situation, because if they fall 0-2, there's some good teams in the NFC. They're going to be sitting 2-0, and again, if their offense, I don't want to say struggles, but, like, does not perform good enough to win, Mike McCarthy's going to be sitting there going, my resume is X, and I know you guys wanted to keep Kellen Moore as your play caller, but I feel the game needs to be being called a different way. If I'm Dallas, I come out absolutely lighting this secondary on fire for Atlanta.
And you know, Dan, that starting off 0-2, no matter what anybody thinks about Washington, they got one in the back pocket.
Right.
Those are the type of teams that you sit around and you say, they're not good. Oh, they lucked out on that. When they were down, they came from behind. They build confidence.
Yeah.
And when you build confidence with that front and that defense, you'll look up and they'll be 2-0.
And I think there's the belief that the Cowboys should just start this game handing the ball off to Zeke Elliott and run the football. No. They need to be aggressive in the pass game. Marcus brought up that firepower for Atlanta. You better be aggressive and attack the secondary in Atlanta through the pass game if you don't want to fall 0-2.
Yeah, I still think at the end of the day, a lot of this falls on Dak Prescott. Good news for Cowboys fans there. He boasts the third best QBR coming off a loss since entering the league in 2016. I love it when highly anticipated debuts live up to the hype, when number two overall picks are as good as advertised. Yeah, I'm talking about Chase Young. Lofty expectations, and he delivered. His 1.5 sacks, the most in a player's first career game since Myles Garrett recorded 2 himself back in 2017. Here's Chase Young with Adam Schefter. Adam, you interviewed him. What impressed you most about the rookie defensive end?
Well, what impressed me most, Laura, was his performance on Sunday, because you normally don't get that type of production that early from defensive linemen. He was in on almost every defensive snap. He forced a sack and a half. He had 4 tackles, forced a fumble. He was every bit as good as people thought he was when Washington drafted him number 2. But he's having fun, and he enjoyed himself. And when he looked back on that game on Sunday, that's something that he'll always remember. His first NFL game coming without any fans in attendance. And he recognizes, as do all players, that you have to bring your own energy to the games. That basically the fans are not there to inspire you. You've got to summon it from deep within yourself. And Chase Young did just that on Sunday.
Yeah, no slight to Joe Burrow, but there were many who thought Chase Young might actually be the best player in this past draft. Marcus, you've been one that's been on him from a long time ago. What did you like about how he played against the Eagles?
Nah, it's no slight. He was the best player in the draft, and his game just translates so well. I mean, you look at today's defensive ends, and Chase Young is almost cut from an old school cloth. The big physical outside guy that can play the run but also rush the pass, real athletic. And Laura, I'm gonna shock everybody with saying this. Chase Young was so green in this game from a technique standpoint. He is still trying to understand his type of space, how he works with the guys that's around him. A lot of D-line play is like playing on a basketball team, learning what those other three guys are going to do. Where are they going to force the quarterback? What do I need to do when I track back to the quarterback? He has natural instinct that you cannot coach. I played with a guy like this named DeMarcus Ware, who was just fast, physical, and was going to win pass rush. But once D. Ware learned the technique, the small little things that you need to do in order to be an effective pass rusher all the time, it became unbelievable. That's where Chase Young is headed, and I expect him to do it great for a long time.
Yeah, one thing he has a chance to do on Sunday against the Cardinals is sack Kyler Murray. That's something that Nick Bosa hasn't even done yet. New on NFL Live right now, and speaking of Kyler Murray, this from John Keim, our reporter there. One note trying to prepare for Kyler Murray, the Washington football team having Kyle Allen try to simulate him. It's really hard to simulate Murray, even if Allen does have some quickness. Yeah. Key. Okay, but here's the thing that's interesting about that. Kyle Allen once beat out Kyler Murray at Texas A&M for the starting job. What do you think about this, Marcus? How do you simulate Murray?
Well, one damn thing I know, Els, is that Kyle Allen ain't simulating Kyler Murray like they need him to, because you need to put a wide receiver or a running back or one of your best skill position players back there at quarterback. As far as the throws, yeah, let him give those looks. Let him give the pass concepts, putting balls in areas where Kyler Murray is going to put it. But you need to make sure, first and foremost, with all of these guys that scream off the edge and these pass rushers on this team, that they have rush lane integrity. These linebackers need to make sure they know how to get Kyler on the ground. Everybody is responsible for getting Kyler Murray on the ground. And I know damn well Kyle Allen ain't simulating that type of athleticism and running to help them get ready for practice.
Yeah, I remember
for the game, I mean.
I remember when we used to have to play against Michael Vick, and our coaching staff used to try and find guys to kind of simulate his speed. And they would just pick out like a defensive back. And then we would get to game day and the defenders would come running off the field being like, it's still not the same.
No, it's never the same. We played against Barry Sanders and we used Dietrich Ward, a receiver, smaller guy to be Barry Sanders. Barry still went for like 200 on us.
Yeah, Kyler's pretty fast.
Hey, Key.
Yo, what up?
Key. Key, we know damn well they ain't have Dan simulating Vic.
Ugh. Dan tried to run in here yesterday.
Okay, he was Matt Schaub.
Okay, hey, listen.
21 minutes into the show.
Dan, what was your 40 time sometime in like high school or something? It was like over six?
My sophomore year of high school, I was 15. I was 6'5", 185. I ran a 6'2", 40.
You 6'5", 185 now.
So I'm about as fast as Key.
6'8", 40 by Dan Orlovsky. Now.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
New on NFL Live, this from our Steelers reporter, Brooke Pryor, tweeting, Ben Roethlisberger and Marquise Pouncey had vet days today. A slew of other Steelers didn't practice, though. Not super unsurprising coming off Monday Night Football. You see the list there. Juju, a guy that didn't practice. Villanueva didn't practice. James Conner, of course, dealing with the ankle injury. The injury report right there for the Pittsburgh Steelers coming off of Monday Night Football. And it makes sense that Ben might not practice. He was feeling it after Monday night.
I was saying today I feel like I was in just a car accident. Yesterday I felt like I was in a train wreck. So hopefully tomorrow just feels like I fell off a bike or something. But I'm definitely sore. The good news is my arm is the only thing that doesn't hurt. So that's good.
Marcus Spears, tell me about that week one soreness.
It's a beast, especially for Ben, man. Been out of football for a year. I've been riding this Peloton, Els. I feel him. I understand what he's talking about. Getting up and down the stairs hard. It hurt when you sleep. That's when you know it's bad, when it hurt when you sleep.
There he is. Hey, you were. That was this morning. You're a little sweaty.
Is that this morning?
Yeah. That's the one from yesterday. I did another one this morning.
So you just went ahead with two a days.
It's a mess. Hey, listen, I have to get better. I look at Keyshawn and Dan and Ryan Clark. I look at all of these dudes with these suits. They look good. They chopped up. I got to get like that, too. I ain't going to have them talking about me on the set. I'm not going to wear pants as tight as Dan's, though.
You're a D lineman, man. You're okay. You're a DT, dog.
Because you can't.
Listen, don't ever wear pants like Dan. Sorry. All right, it's a new marriage in Tampa between Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. You got to wonder if Brady was ready for his coach to be so public in his assessment of the quarterback. Barely. Take a listen.
Barely.
One was a miscommunication between him and Mike, and he thought Mike was going down the middle, the different coverage, and Tom just overthrew it. And the other one, it was a screen pass with an outlet called, and he threw the outlet, and it was a pick six. Bad decision.
He looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time.
I never want to come out of a game with a 10 targets to Mike at least, and the ball's in the quarterback's hands, so the targets come that way.
I was amused when they handed us the Lombardi Trophy in July. Tom and I were fine, so I don't really care what other people think. There ain't nothing to talk about. We're on to Carolina now.
You heard that at the end. It was almost an ode to Bill Belichick there, but he also said Arians did. That was from today, that sound at the very end about Tom Brady and him being fine. Marcus, any issue with Bruce Arians calling his quarterback out like this?
None whatsoever. Tom Brady is as confident and should be as confident as anybody that's ever played this game. I don't think Tom is worried about it. Maybe he looked at it and said, dang, Bruce, I know we agreed that you were going to get on me, but you on number like 3 or 4 now. But this is what it is. Like, we've seen this with great players before. I've been on teams where the best player, he gets scolded, he gets talked about in the media publicly because it's letting everybody else on the team know that no one is above the scrutiny and the criticism that comes along with a very hard job. So I got no problem with this. I'm sure Bruce and Tom is on the same page, and I'd be shocked to know if they didn't already have a plan for something like this to take place so everybody else on that team could pay attention and make sure they paid attention to detail as well.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Bruce Arians has looked in the mirror a little bit coming off of that game and said, okay, is there some things that I can do better as a coach and a play caller that not only help our quarterback, but maybe our best receiver, Mike Evans? I don't think they did enough for Mike Evans. You think about where they placed him. Outside of the traditional left and right by himself, he's in the slot. He lined up in the slot 8 times on Sunday afternoon. The first 7 times he was in the slot, he ran the same route. Seam route, seam route, seam route. And Marshawn Lattimore just kept wearing him out, wearing him out, and wearing him out. Couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. They weren't doing anything to help him. That's actually the route that led to that interception that Tom Brady throws. That got predictable with what they were doing with Mike Evans. They motioned pre-snap Chris Godwin, their other receiver, 9 times. They pre-snap motioned Scotty Miller 8 times. They pre-snap motioned Mike Evans 0 times. So as a play caller, you got to look and go, am I doing enough to help my guy get going? So it's not just targets. It's actual targets that are going to help him and your quarterback play better.
Where's your concern level, Key, with the Bucs offense?
I really don't have a concern at all. I think when you look at missing time, not being in a full training camp, a new system, a new everything for them, I'm not concerned. The thing that I am concerned with is Tom Brady and the interceptions. When you go and you look at Bruce Arians' history with quarterbacks, either as a quarterback coach, an offensive coordinator, or a head coach, the interceptions in the first year with them are alarming. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at that number, 28, 21, 11, 18, 22, 30. Tom already has 2. So that's really what I'm saying is like, okay, some of these guys are young and some of them have been veterans like Carson Palmer. And then obviously Peyton Manning, 28, he was young at that point in time. I think when you look at it, Tom may have a high rate of interceptions this year. I don't know that it'll get to Jameis Winston 30, but it'll certainly get to 10 or 12 because of the situation with the new offense, misreading situations with Mike Evans. Evans supposed to be the bender on all go scene. Instead, Tom is expecting one thing, he does another. Therefore, it's an interception.
So it's more about just a new offense than it is what the actual scheme is for Arians that would lead to quarterback interceptions.
It's learning things all over again. For 20 years, Tom Brady was in New England, Laura, and it was the same thing. Whether you had Charlie Weiss calling it, whether you had Josh McDaniels, Bill O'Brien, Josh again, it pretty much was the same thing. So you know as a quarterback, when you're hearing new terminology and new information, you cannot just go to the line of scrimmage and it snaps like that. You're still kind of deciphering what to do and how to do it.
But that's why I think this falls on Bruce Arians a little bit in his shoulders, because, like, I'm going to talk about the two interceptions. If you look at the play that with the Mike Evans is the pick, Tom Brady is in the shotgun. He does a flash fake and tries to do a bending seam. In New England, Tom Brady was under center. He would turn his back to the defense. It'd be a harder fake, and then they would wrap it. So do you want to put Tom under center, a little bit more comfort level? And then that out to the field, I said this on Monday, they should throw that play into garbage. I don't care how many times Bruce Arians has run that play with the quarterbacks of his past. Throw it in the garbage. Ask Tom Brady to run that play.
Yeah, I've really never seen Tom throw from the left all the way back across the field on a five-yard out. I just never seen it.
But is that maybe Marcus Tom Brady himself campaigning to add some of those things to the playbook?
I don't think so. I think it's been a little overzealous because we've talked, and they know the amount of weapons that they have on this team and trying to do extra and do more instead of being in Tom Brady's wheelhouse and what he's done successfully. I think Key and Dan makes a great point. Don't do things Tom Brady doesn't do well. That should have been negotiated before he decided to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You get him a run game. Obviously, we know he likes to have a run game. That's what he's used to. You get him these dink and dunk passes, and every now and then he works the middle of the field with his tight ends. He has O.J. Howard in that role of the athletic guy that can go down the field and stretch it. And obviously Mike Evans and Chris Godwin on the outside. But when you think about all of these things that we just talked about, my only issue is if Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are asking Tom Brady to do something he's never done, they're dead wrong.
I bet we don't see the out route that much this week with Tom Brady. We're back on NFL Live. Something to keep an eye on. Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson isn't thrilled with the team right now. His agent confirming to Adam Schefter that he hasn't asked for a trade. Did say they're unhappy with Chicago and unhappy they haven't paid him considering the market value for wide receivers. Robinson on the last year of his contract, he's making an average of $13 million a year on this deal. And he does say that he wants to continue to be a Bear. Let's do some quick reads. Key, does Allen Robinson need a new deal?
Absolutely, he needs a new deal. Whenever you got a quarterback like Mitch Trubisky that you're trying to develop, you want to keep that receiver happy. You go around the league and you look at the receivers in certain teams with certain guys like Adams, Devontae Adams. You look at Julio Jones, all those guys, Michael Thomas, they're getting that money, Keenan Allen, they're happy. Why not make your receiver happy? If not, trade him. It's a bunch of teams that would love to have a guy like that.
Dan, what about Corey Davis in Tennessee?
A huge game one for Corey Davis. Listen, we know that Tennessee's going to run the football, and then they've got A.J. Brown. But if Corey Davis comes on and starts to show more signs of the first-round pick he was a couple years ago, this takes this offense to a whole different level. Huge game the other night, 7 catches, over 100 yards. If they get that consistent production out of Corey Davis, Tennessee's going to be difficult to stop.
Marcus, Phillip Rivers has got to avoid 0-2 start, right?
Yes, $25 million invested in Phillip Rivers, supposedly an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett, who at times played great before he was injured last year. This has to pay dividends. Phillip turned the ball over a lot in Los Angeles. He needs to take care of the football because he started that trend in the first game of the season. Don't go 0-2, Phillip.
Guys, this just minutes ago, Aaron Rodgers speaking and happened to refer to our Dan Orlovsky, a take that he had yesterday. He did a tape talking about how Aaron Rodgers played his best game week one since 5 years ago. Here's the tweet from Dan. He said, 5 years, best Aaron Rodgers game for the Packers. One reason stood out above all. Why? Don't give me just anticipation. Don't give me just accuracy. Give me both together. He tags all these people, and that's why Aaron Rodgers sees his tweet. Dan, watch out. Here's Aaron Rodgers talking about you.
I saw Dan say something about the best game I've had in 5 years. I think that's an exaggerated take, with all due respect to Dan. I've known Dan for a long time. We were roommates back in 2004 at the Elite 11 quarterback camp as we were both college kids. Played against him a few times. I have a lot of love for Dan. I think he does a great job on TV. But, I think some of his takes may be slightly exaggerated at times.
He knows me well.
Oh, man.
He knows me well.
I mean, Dan, you're so red right now. Oh, my goodness.
That's sunburn. I don't expect Aaron to think that, like, he hasn't played well over the past couple of years, so I can respect it. But I think it was his best game in 5 years. I'm not backing down from that.
Dan is doubling down. Marcus, I got to get you in here because I know you're laughing about this. Aaron Rodgers calling out our guy.
I love it. I love it. First of all, that's respect. Number one, I enjoy when guys call us out because, number one, they watching. And the second thing is, you know, what you say, you got to own it. And that's what our responsibility is. I love everything about this, man. The relationships, Dan knows exactly what that tone means. We all do. But he's supposed to get called out because Aaron Rodgers has been playing really good the last 5 years.
Okay, well, let's talk about Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know where Rodgers. You got that from. I can't even jump in. I don't know where you got that from.
Well, it's fine. We're going to let you. Game. Hey, listen, we'll let you have your own Aaron Rodgers and Packers take right now. What do you think about their offense? And they have outperformed what a lot of people thought they would, even though it was just 1 week and one game.
I always thought that they were fine with the receivers. I looked at the receivers the way they played a year ago. And when they were healthy, they did service. I mean, they went to the NFC Championship game. Yes, they struggled, but they did go to the NFC Championship game. They weren't 13-3. I don't know what the big fuss was about. And then it becomes, they selected Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers' days are numbered. No, that's not true. Aaron Rodgers will be signing an extension probably within the next 12 to 18 months based on the salary cap situation and the way he's performing. You think about it, 2021 is $36 million and 2022 is $39
million. Right.
They're not getting ready to whack him or move him. All they're going to do is make that money guaranteed and put him in that stratosphere of that $200 to $300 million quarterback on the back end of his career.
Yeah, it's years down the road that it would even make a little bit of financial sense to say bye-bye to Aaron Rodgers. But, Marcus, you have been strongly on the other side of this, saying that you think he doesn't finish his career in Green Bay. Why have you been on that train, and what do you think after seeing them week one?
Because I wasn't worried about what the Green Bay Packers wanted to do from a money standpoint. I based a lot of that off of Aaron Rodgers' reaction when Jordan Love was drafted. When he was drafted, he was not happy. He said he was shocked. He thought they should go another direction. And I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but him saying he was shocked, I automatically thought that they would provide weapons is what came to his mind for him to go further. They took his point, and what I've been saying, they went to the NFC Championship. What was the one piece that could have taken them over? I know damn well it wasn't a backup quarterback. So I based all of that in the fact that Aaron Rodgers didn't believe that the Green Bay Packers made this particular move in the draft to help them get past an NFC championship, let alone going forward in the future. But based on this, and look, this was a part of the conversation too. I said Green Bay might have felt comfortable with the receivers that they had, even going back to last year. They might have known something we didn't know about these guys. And based on 1 week, the performance was legit. I still say if Aaron Rodgers doesn't have success with this cast going along during the season, he's going to want to get out of there.
Yeah,
I stand by that.
And, Shefty, a lot of this, too, has been about Rodgers and his relationship with LaFleur, which seems like it's been improving. At least that's what they say. What do you hear about that?
I don't think that that's an issue, Laura. I think that those guys get along pretty well. I think Matt LaFleur, frankly, was surprised to see the pick in the draft. I think that these guys like each other, respect Ooh. Each other, get along well with each other. I don't think Aaron Rodgers' issue was with the coaching staff when that first-round pick was made. I think it was more with the front office than it was the coaching staff at that time. And look, he came out last week and it looked like the front office staff knew more than we did about those receivers, with Valdes-Scantling making plays, Allen Lazard making plays, the other wide receivers that have been questioned in the past stepping up and making big-time plays against the Vikings on Sunday.
Yeah, Chef, do you bring up those young receivers like everybody has? And listen, I'm going to shoot you straight, guys. Like, they could have hung a 50-burger on Minnesota if not for two more drops. I still think it was his best game in years. And let me say this. If those young receivers are going to play the way they did on Sunday, Green Bay is the class of the NFC. Green Bay is the class of the NFC. They look like the most complete football team. If their quarterback feels this good and those young receivers are playing that way, they're the class of the NFC. They're healthy right now.
Dan's put him in the Super Bowl, Marcus, real fast.
Yeah, boy, you got what every day.
They're the class of the NFC. Tell me who's better right now. San Francisco's got major injuries.
Seattle's
major
real.
Injury issues.
Seattle's
real, no question. I'm not debating
maybe
that.
Maybe the team in Seattle.
Yeah. All right, Marcus picked that team in Seattle to be in the Super Bowl, so that's why he says that too.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, how about Cam Newton and what he did week one for the Patriots? It was a whole lot of running. In fact, 15 rushes from the quarterback. Here's the thing. He said after the game he's fine with doing it however they want him to. Designed runs on 65% of the plays. That was the highest for the Patriots since 2004. Feels like Josh McDaniels has a new toy with this offense, and there's a lot that he can do there, Dan. But do you think that this will be the blueprint for the Patriots' offense after what you saw week one?
I think it has to be, right? Because if you look at the Patriots' offense, you go, who's the best player? And it's Cam Newton. And so you really want to build all your offense around your best player. And what Cam does best is run the football. And so I think Josh McDaniels has got to continuously look at this offense and go, all right, we've traditionally done games by the week and find matchups and all that stuff, but you had a different player at the quarterback spot. And you can't sit there and say, we'll do whatever's best for the team and go, we don't want to run Cam this week. You know, because the best thing for that offense is to make sure the ball is in Cam's hands multiple times running the football. Now, yes, it's that fine line of we don't want to expose him and all that stuff and take too many hits. But I said this weeks ago, the challenge for Josh McDaniels is one, to get Cam Newton playing well. Two, to get the offense playing well. And then three, to find a way to win football games while doing that. So the one side is don't run him a ton, but is that winning football? That's the challenge.
Well, it's not college football. They're not going to run him a ton. That presented itself against the Miami Dolphins. And when you look at Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels' history, game plan week to week varies, different depending on your opponent. That is the way that they've always done it. Bill Parcells, Todd Haley, they were the same way. It's matchups. And what is it the defense is going to give us and take away? When you look at Seattle, for instance, they're going to do something totally different. Maybe they spread it out. Maybe they don't. Maybe they go 4 or 5 receivers. Maybe they don't. Maybe they go empty. Maybe they put a fullback, 2 tight ends. Whatever that game plan is, they're going to take what Seattle gives them. Just talking about this week, Tom Brady every single week, different game plan.
Right.
It wasn't the same game plan. Yeah, they're going to have some wrinkles of him running the football 12, 9, 8 times to take advantage of those. But you won't see. This is not college. He's not going to be in the Wildcat running read options every single play. Not going to happen.
Yeah, well, you definitely wouldn't have seen Tom Brady running it 15 times either. Marcus, you heard Key mentioning Seattle this week. That defense looked dominant, especially Jamal Adams. What do you do to scheme for a guy like him?
Els, the first thing you do is make sure you know where he is at all times, and that's including when the bus arrives at the stadium, and make sure you track him from there. Listen, he plays on every level. He switches sides, he blitzes off the edge, he comes off slot in blitzes, and this operation that Cam is going to run in the backfield, Jamal Adams plays a vital role in speeding up the operation of that RPO and just laying hat on people. He's a short tackler, and we were talking about this before the show. Key said I would put him in coverage situations, and I agree. Get him away from the line of scrimmage because you don't know what he's going to do. I remember being on the sideline with the Cowboys when Troy Polamalu was with the Steelers. You had absolutely no idea what he was going to do pre-snap of the football. And that's the role that Seattle put Jamal Adams in his first game against the Atlanta Falcons. And I don't think they deviate from that plan at all. New England needs a plan to make sure that they can stymie that.
Yeah, it really makes you scratch your head about why the Jets would let Jamal Adams go anywhere except on their team. Dan,
well,
I'm curious,
I mean,
just the eye test.
The Jets.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious the eye test on Cam Newton. I feel like we haven't talked enough about how good he looked, how healthy he looked running the football.
Yeah, he looked outstanding. I mean, if you watched him, he looked fast early on and powerful early on. And I would say this. We've talked a lot this week about Cam running the football. He actually looked really good throwing the football, getting through progressions, getting the ball out of hands, be kind of efficient with it as well. And so that's going to be the challenge every week is can you get him to do that on a consistent basis while running the football? If Josh McDaniels can do that, then this offense does have a chance to mask their weakness.
Let's stay in the division and talk about the Jets. CEO and chairman of the Jets, Christopher Johnson, spoke today on Adam Gase, gave him that dreaded vote of confidence. Here's some of what he said. I think he can work with and develop quarterbacks. I do continue to think he's a brilliant offensive mind, especially he has my every confidence. All right, time now for one more thing before we go. And Marcus, we're going right to you to start this off.
I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. You're the only one in America that think that. And when before you say you thought that, based on what you watching, we watching, everybody around the Jets organization watching, he ain't developing a damn thing. Because Sam Darnold is a really good player and ain't got better since he showed up in New York to play for the Jets. So keep that same energy, Johnson, with Adam Gase.
How do you follow that? I want to talk about Mike Thomas and the fact that he's got the ankle injury and potentially won't be playing this coming week on Monday night in foreseeable future. How do the Saints kind of replace him in the pass game, in the distribution of the football game? They run their offense through him. That is a big loss for this team if he doesn't play.
Look, the Houston Texans, Dan, and Wagyu, you gotta look at what he's doing as a head coach, Bill O'Brien, as well as a general manager. Get rid of the general manager hat. Find somebody. Call Rick Smith back up and say, yo, dog, won't you come help me out with this? Because I've completely screwed it up on the personnel side. I need to concentrate on calling plays and getting my offense going.
Guys, breaking news. Andy Reid is going to get a new face shield
for the
game this week. It's not going to be as foggy. I hate to tell you, because I, for one, love the fog, but he's going to be able to see his play sheet, which is very helpful. It's a special gel they put on this new face shield, apparently, and somehow it doesn't fog up. We'll see how that goes. Hey, Adam Schefter, you got one more thing, too.
Yeah, Laura, early in the show, you asked Keyshawn if Allen Robinson should be paid. Asking Key if a wide receiver should be paid is like asking Andy Reid if he should start Patrick Mahomes on Sunday. It's like asking Keyshawn Johnson
if he likes a free meal.
Of course Key loves free meals. Wide receivers should be paid.
Adam, what's the difference in talking about quarterbacks to some of these quarterbacks that's on the show? They go look out for QBs. You're going to look out for insiders. I'm going to look out for wide receivers. That's just what it is.
Adam is big amongst the insiders. He looks out for all of them.
Brand can do. He can call down there to Chicago and try to get Allen Robinson.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live. Thanks for tuning in.